Hey, everybody. This is Bob Holly, better known as Hardcore Holly. You're listening to Solid Monster Sounds Off.
Welcome to this special episode of the Solid Monster Sounds Off, which you can listen to every Sunday on thesolidmonster.com, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play Music. Jason back here with you, and it is my pleasure to have with me now a former WWE Tag Team Champion, a six-time hardcore champion. He spent 15 years working for WWE, and he's also the co-author of The Hardcore Truth, which is one of the most honest wrestling books you'll ever read. It's available on Audible for those of you who want the audiobook version. Bob Holly is on the line. How are you, Bob?
Hey, Jason. I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on Solid Monster Sounds Off.
That's my pleasure. This is a long time in the making. And let me just apologize to everybody if I sound nasally. These allergies here are kicking my ass in New York.
It's about that time of year.
Oh, yeah. I don't know, right? I don't know how bad it is out by you, but here it's a killer.
Well, it's hot here. It's not too bad right now, but I'm sure the allergy season will be getting here this direction here soon.
So how's life been treating you post-WWE? I know you just came back from a tour over in the UK.
Everything's been going well. I actually enjoy doing what I'm doing now. And I do some independent stuff. I get to get out and do a lot of wrestling seminars, too. And what I tell people a lot of times is, the reason I enjoy doing this is because I actually get to meet fans and talk to them. Because when you're with WWE, you don't get the opportunity to sit and talk with fans so they can get to know the person, not the character. And when you watch WWE, all you see is the character on TV. And you really don't have access to us in any other way except for a quick meet and greet, which is, you take a picture, sign an autograph, and boom, they get you out of the room just that quick. You don't get to spend any time with the guy. And this way, doing these independents and so forth, I actually get to sit and talk with people, with wrestling fans, and they actually get to know the real person, Bob Howard, not, you know, Hardcore Holly, so to speak. And it gives everybody a different outlook on once they meet me and they get to know who I really am. And I enjoy talking to the fans anyway, getting to hear their inputs on the shows and so forth, which actually I don't really watch the show too much. It's kind of hard for me to watch.
I don't blame you.
But I don't do a lot of independence because I don't want to get into the whole traveling thing every weekend all the time, because I enjoy my downtime. I enjoy being with my family. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell. I spend a lot of time in the woods whenever I get a chance to. I'm a big survival guy. I've been into survival for many years now, and I'm actually trying to get on a TV show called Alone.
I was going to ask you about that later, but we may as well bring it up now. I know it's a History Channel reality show. Tell people what the show is about.
Yeah, the whole concept is they take 10 people, and they drop them off into a wooded area, and the last two seasons were in Vancouver Island. And what they do is these 10 people survive, and you could be out there up to a full year. And they tell you to be prepared for a full year. And the whole concept is just outlast the other nine. And I think season one, the guy lasted 53 days, if I'm not mistaken. And season two just finished up a few weeks ago, and the guy lasted 58 days, I believe. And you know, you actually win prize money at the end. But my whole deal is I like the challenge of it, and because survival is what I'm into, and that's what I'd like to give it a shot. And I actually sent History Channel an email to be on their show and explain to them who I was and everything. And because, you know as well as I do, Jason, everything is about ratings.
Of course.
And not that I'm a big name draw guy or anything like that, but your wrestling fan, I believe, would tune in just to see me in a whole nother element outside of wrestling and just see how I would do in a situation like that, just out of curiosity to see if I would make it or not.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it almost doesn't even matter who it is. All they would have to do is advertise, you know, a former WWE star, and that's all you need to do.
Absolutely. Right, absolutely. You know, so hopefully, and see, they sent me an email back saying they're very interested, and all I have to do now is just get some video footage of me being out in the woods doing survival situation type stuff. So that's my plan within the next couple of weeks, because I just got home from England and trying to decompress from that. And my wife and I and my dog were fixing to head out into the woods to shoot some of this stuff, so that way I can get footage for the History Channel. So hopefully they'll choose me as one of their cast members for season 4, because they're shooting season 3 right now. So hopefully I'll get picked for season 4. Cross my fingers.
Well, best of luck to you on that. Hopefully it works out. I've got a lot of things I want to get into with you, but I know you've got quite a bit you want to get off your chest as it relates to this class action lawsuit that was recently filed against WWE over concussions, over 50 plaintiffs and counting, many of whom you worked with. Yeah, many of whom you worked with in WWE. So, and just so everybody knows, you are not part of this lawsuit. We can get into some of the names here, but I know you have a lot to say, so the floor is yours. What do you think about this whole thing?
You know, I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, some of the, like, okay, the whole concussion thing with these guys saying that they have issues with concussions. Now, if these guys truly have issues, have they been tested by professionals or gone through the process of being tested to where these doctors say, yeah, you have issues because of a concussion, which highly unlikely most of them haven't. And I truly, because it's like, okay, why are they going after WWE? What about their pre-WWE days or WWF days? Like WCW, when these guys were in WCW, how come they're not going after Ted Turner? That's my question. Why all of a sudden is it Vince's problem? And there's been a few guys that weren't even there long enough to buy a watch, and, you know, they're suing the company. And it's just absolutely ridiculous. I've had concussions with the company before, and this was back before we even had trainers. This was back before we had doctors or anything travel with us. And it was just one of those unwritten rules that if you're hurt, you got to keep going, because somebody's always going to be there to take your spot. And in WWE's defense, that was before all this whole concussion thing came along, and nobody knew nothing about concussions to begin with. And then here you have guys that are saying that they have issues with their concussion, being concussed. Well, why are these guys still working? Like Chavo, for example. I love Chavo to death. But isn't his name's on the list, am I not mistaken?
Yep, that's right.
And he's been working for Lucha Underground, doing all this crazy stuff over the last couple of years, but yet he's going to go after WWE. That makes no sense to me. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, again, I wanted to get your perspective on this. Obviously, I read something like this. I'm reading it from the outside looking in as a fan. But, you know, when I talked about it on my show a few weeks ago, now, I know you said you had read the entire lawsuit, so I know you're probably pretty well versed in who's involved and everything. There were some names who jumped out at me that I just shook my head. I mean, for example, I'll just spit one out, and I know he was in the company at the same time you were, Ahmed Johnson. And I know that, you know, in the lawsuit it mentions how he would do suicide dives, and he didn't know that it would be harmful to his health. And, you know, I hear that, and I just shake my head. How it just seems like common sense to me.
Well, it's like anything, once you get in that ring, it's like anything you do, you take a risk walking down the street, and you know full well going into that ring, you're risking your life no matter what, because you have a passion for what you do, and you put all that to the side and just go out there and give 100% and deal with the consequences later. You're the one that wanted to come to that company. You're the one that put yourself out there. And again, that was back when concussions weren't even discussed. Nobody knew anything about them. And it's like, okay, how long did he even work for the company? Not very long. But did he go to a specialist to have all these tests run saying this guy has got issues with concussions? I don't know. You know, most like, but my point being is, why all of a sudden is WWE responsible for everybody? And there's several other guys like, you know, oh gosh, I'm drawing a blank.
Well, I mean, there's a couple of other names. You got a name like Shane Douglas, Muhammad Hassan. He's part of this thing.
Right, like Shane, Sabu, you know, he's part of the lawsuit too. But look what he was doing before he even got in WWE.
Yeah,
with ECW.
And I think
it was just crazy.
Yeah, and Sabu, and I don't know who's telling the truth here or not. I who knows? But he went on Twitter after this whole thing came out, and he claimed that he didn't sue WWE, and he has no idea why his name is on here.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I don't know, because the only way you can get your name on that piece of paper is talk to an attorney and
exactly.
Get your name on that list, you know? That's the only way I know. I just don't understand it. Like, a lot of the other stuff, like, I'm going back to back when I had my staph infection, and I could have totally sued that company, and I didn't do it. And sometimes I question why I didn't do it, and I know why I didn't do it is because, number one, I'm loyal. But I had them right there in the palm of my hand because I don't know if you remember when I had the staph infection. I'll never forget. We were in Minneapolis, and I was supposed to work that night, and Dr. Rios checked me out. My forearm was like swollen really bad, and I was sick. Like, I had flu-like symptoms and everything. And so Dr. Rios checked me out and told John Laurinaitis, hey, Bob needs to go to the hospital now. He's got staph. And Johnny was like, no, Bob needs to go to Europe because I need him over there. And Dr. Rios was actually for the boys. He ended up getting fired simply because he was telling Vince things that Vince didn't want to hear, essentially. And so, I truly believe Vince had no idea about this situation going on with me and the staph infection, because Johnny kept just insisting to Dr. Rios that I go, that I had to go, I had to go, I had to go. Anyway, long story short, I ended up going and I got sicker, a lot sicker. So they wound up sending me home and they sent me to the hospital, and come find out the staph was so bad, I ended up in the hospital for like 3 weeks.
Wow.
And they put me on vancomycin. It's one of the strongest antibiotics there is. And they said, if that doesn't work, we're going to have to amputate his arm. I mean, I was scared to death. All because Johnny wouldn't listen to Dr. Rios and send me to the hospital. Because that the disease specialist told me, if you would have went to the hospital like you were told to go, he said, we'd have never gotten this far. You'd have been totally fine. And I was really pretty pissed about that. And it's funny because Stephanie McMahon, she would call me at home every week to make sure I was fine. Hey, don't worry about nothing. When you come back, everything's going to be fine. We're going to take care of you. I mean, just kept telling me everything I wanted to hear. And I think they were just covering their ass, basically, because they knew they were on the hook because of Johnny sending me to Europe when I should have went to the hospital.
Sure.
And like, some of the claims in this lawsuit go beyond just the concussions. It talks about the company not taking care of, you know, medical emergencies and things like that of that nature, or if you're hurt, they make you keep working and stuff. Now, in that situation, I truly believe Vince didn't know what was going on. That was Johnny Laurinaitis. That was his bullshit. And you know what they needed me over there for? Was a battle royal. And it just blew my mind when I got over there, and because we were shooting TV that following weekend. So production crew, everybody from Austin was coming over. And so when Johnny finally got over there, he knew how sick I was by the time he got there. So they were making arrangements for me to fly home. And I called him on it. I'm like, you needed me for a battle royal. Really, a fucking battle royal. That's what you needed me for. You know, and it was, he couldn't answer. He had nothing to say. So anyway, I mean, he was just really like kissing my ass and saying, hey, I'm going to get you a flight home right now. And then another situation arose when he was on the phone with Nicole in the office And I don't know what was up her butt, but I overheard her on the phone because they were getting a flight arranged for me to go home. And she had everything pulled up, and she was picking the seat for me to go home. And it was like something like 28F. And she goes, I got him a seat number 28F for fuck him. And now that's coming from somebody from the office, you know, so that was another situation where I could have got him, you know, for whatever else, whatever they call that, you know, kind of harassment or something. But anyway,
well, negligence,
you know, and negligence. Yeah. And so I just blew it off because I mean, I was just so sick. And anyways, long story short, that was one of those situations where the office, when they say we always, because in this, I think WWE made claims here not too lately that they've always taken care of the boys, took their health, you know, priority. And there's certain situations where they haven't done that. And I'll give you another example. That whole thing with Matt Capitelli, that was a huge deal. And when I had cracked a vertebrae in my neck working with Brock. And so they sent me, had an MRI done. Well, they said Bob needs to have surgery right away because it's, you know, it's not good to have a cracked vertebrae. Anyway, they said, we're going to send you to San Antonio, but first we need you to go to L.A. to shoot one of the episodes for Tough Enough. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, and then that's when that whole thing with me and Matt Capitelli happened. I was in the ring with him with a cracked vertebrae in my neck because the office wanted me to fly there first, do that first, and then fly to San Antonio. And so when they came out with that statement that they've always put the talent's health first and always made sure they were taken care of, you know, that's a little questionable on certain situations because I got in the ring with Matt Capitelli with a cracked vertebrae. And then after that, and that, you know, that's when that whole thing with Capitelli happened. And then I flew to San Antonio that next day and had surgery. So, you know, some of the claims in that lawsuit, I would have to say have a little bit of merit to them. But as far as the concussion thing, I just don't see that. I really don't.
Yeah, I think it's a case where, and maybe that's what makes this so frustrating, is that you can find examples, I'm sure, like the ones you just mentioned, where the company is pretty much, you know, dead to rights, and they've made a lot of really stupid mistakes. But I think without any evidence here that, you know, they were actively hiding information from these guys, I don't think this thing has any legs. And also, you know, earlier in the year, there were already a bunch of concussion suits that got thrown out. I know Billy Jack Haynes had filed one, and then I think it was Luther Reigns, who I'm sure you remember him.
Yeah.
You know, he had filed one that got tossed. But let me play devil's advocate here for a second. There was a similar class action suit brought against the NFL, and they settled, I think, for $1 billion. Would you apply that same logic, what you just said, in that situation, that the players knew the risks of getting hit in the head, or they should have known, and they were just looking for a payday?
I just think they were looking for a payday. I mean, it's common sense. I mean, come on. It's common sense that you're playing something that is very dangerous, number one. The risk of injury is very high, but that's you love football, so that's your decision to play the game. And I don't see how they can come back and get money out of the NFL because that's what they chose to do. It's part of what you do. It's all part of what you do. And these guys that go out there and jump off these ladders and take these big risks of injuring themselves, to be perfectly honest, like when I went out there and did things and when I took chances, I wanted to entertain the people, so I was putting that on me. You don't have to go to that ring and jump off of a ladder. You don't have to do that, but you choose to do that because you want to entertain the people. And every time you go out there, you raise the bar. And these guys know exactly what they're doing every time they go out there. They know they're raising the bar. But why is it the company's responsibility to have to pay these guys millions of dollars because they're crying that they got hurt 20 years ago or 10 or 15 years ago. I don't understand that.
Yeah, I think it just boils down to WWE's the only game left in town.
Right.
I know you've had a lot of concussions in your career. With all that we know now, are you worried about the long-term effects? I mean, do you have any problems now?
Absolutely not. I'm not worried about it. And the thing is going after WWE is the last thing on my mind. I function fine. I say that now, but I mean, I function fine. I've had several concussions. Yeah, but there's nothing out of the ordinary that I don't do anything strange or anything. That's another thing that puzzles me about these guys. I was with that company for 15 years. Taking just as many bumps, if not more bumps, than most of these guys now, and they're having issues. And I can't say for a fact that these guys are lying or making this stuff up, but I take it with a grain of salt.
One issue that's also raised in the lawsuit is the independent contractor classification. WWE considers its performers independent contractors and not employees. And yet, as you well know, I mean, they exert an awful lot of control over the talent. You know, guys are bound by these non-compete clauses when they leave or they get released. I know there was a study published last year that used what the IRS calls the 20-factor test. So they use that to determine whether or not someone meets the criteria for employment status. And they found that WWE met 16 of the 20 different points for its talent to be considered employees. You worked there for a long time. Do you think they ought to be considered employees?
I do. I honestly do. I really do. It's like going back to the whole thing when they started the dress code. It's like, if I'm an independent contractor, you cannot tell me how to dress. It's like I'm having a independent contractor come to my house. He's not here now, but I'm having my bathrooms remodeled. I can't tell that man how to dress when he comes in my house. I can't tell him to take a drug test before he comes in my house. I can't tell him what time to be at my house. All he can tell me is that he'll be here to do the work. And that's it. We have an agreement for him to do the work. But WWE, they like to control their talent, and they like to tell them what to wear, when to be where, how to act, how to talk, how to walk. They tell you how to do everything. You have to abide by their rules. And I've worked regular jobs before. And then working for WWE is no different than when I was a welder by trade working at a cryogenic plant. We had the same rules, but I was an employee there. Pretty much the same rules with WWE applied. So I don't see how it's any different being an employee than an independent contractor. I really think they should be employees.
You're very open in your book when it comes to steroids. You admit to taking them, but not abusing them the way a lot of guys did. I know the other subject you really wanted to talk about here is WWE's wellness policy. And you may bring this up anyway, but I also want to get your thoughts on the idea that part-time performers, as we recently found out with Brock Lesnar, are not subject to drug testing the same way that everybody else on the roster is. What say you on the wellness policy?
That's a crock of shit. You know what they told us? They told us, Jason, when they first started that wellness policy, they told us that everybody who is an in-ring performer will be drug tested. Doesn't matter who you are. And it's out of their hands. Dr. Black is in charge of everybody at Aegis Labs. It's out of our hands. We have no control over it. But obviously they have control over it. Because if you're an in-ring performer, you will be tested. It doesn't matter if you're part-time, full-time, or whatever. You will be tested if you are performing inside that ring. And I think it's everything is situational. And I think it's a huge double standard. Huge double standard. And I think they're very selective when it comes to individual talent, who gets away with what. Like, I know the very top guys, the ones that make a ton of money for the company, they get a lot more free passes than the mid-card guys or the, you know, the guys that open the shows. I know that for a fact. And they even get company credit cards. And I know that for a fact. And it's just a huge, to me, it's just blatantly wrong. Billy Gunn got fired because he was tested by a third party. Had nothing to do with WWE. He got fired because he was taking testosterone, which he has a prescription for. So why is Brock, how is Brock any different than Billy Gunn? Billy Gunn wasn't even an in-ring performer. He was down there at the performance center training guys. I just think it's they're very selective and who they do things for. And even though they say, because they told us this in the meeting too, that if you are found, if you do test positive for anything, it's out of our hands. Dr. Black is the one that suspends the talent, not us. So I took that and I'm like, okay, that's fine. You know, it is what it is. So a few months later, I got suspended for DECA, which Dr. Black called me and said, hey, Bob, you know, you tested positive for DECA, which for those that don't know, it's a steroid, because I was taking DECA and test, which I had a prescription for the test, which I was okay on. But the DECA, not so much. You can't get a prescription for that unless I think it's like it's for cancer patients or people with growth hormone deficiencies and stuff like that. But anyway, so he calls me and he tells me, I got to suspend you for 30 days. I'm like, okay, that's fine. And this was at the time when smoking marijuana was just a fine. So I was curious. And I asked Dr. Black, and I talk about this in my book too. And while I had Dr. Black on the phone, I said, Dr. Black, I said, let me ask you something. I said, why? Because I never smoked pot. I never have. It just was never my thing. And I just didn't think it was right that guys get suspended for doing steroids and they get suspended, but somebody smoking pot doesn't, when that was an illegal drug back then. And so I just asked him, I'm like, okay, why is smoking marijuana just a fine? And he goes, well, he said, if I had it my way, he said, anybody that did it would be fine, would be suspended. He said, Vince is in charge of that, and he's the one that makes all the decisions. And I said, makes the decisions like how and who gets suspended? And he said, yes, he's the one who decides who gets suspended. And I'm like, okay, so you're telling me you're not the one that decides? He goes, no. He said, I just report to Vince, who was found positive, and I report to him the list of talent that was found positive, and he deals with it from there and tells me, and I make the call to call everybody to tell them they're suspended. And I'm like, oh, okay. So Vince is in charge of that. And he said, yes, Vince is the one that was in charge of that, who decides. And I told him, I said, well, in the talent meeting, we were told you're the one. He said, no. He said, Vince decides. I was like, okay, that explained everything then. You know, so that's just a little bit of, I just think it's very hypocritical. That company is just so hypocritical. It really is. I mean, don't get me wrong. That company made me a great living. I had some really good times, and I had some terrible times too. Don't get me wrong. It's like anything. And the whole thing with the, you know, Brock. Okay, let's say, for example, let's say hypothetically something happens to Brock. God forbid something happens to him. Well, then they do an autopsy and they find out, if, you know, it's steroids. So where does the company stand then? You follow me?
Sure.
It's like, how's that going to make their wellness policy look? So when you're a part-timer, that tells me you can go do every drug under the sun and then still come in the ring and perform.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's what that's telling me. Right. He could be high as he wants to if he takes whatever he takes. If he, you know, I'm not saying he takes anything, don't get me wrong, but he's obviously on something because he got popped by the UFC drug testing. But as far as any recreational drugs, if he decided to do any of that, he could do it and get in the ring and wrestle somebody, and possibly something could happen. And then who's at fault there? Who's to blame for that?
You spent 15 years working there straight through, which puts you in some pretty special company with guys like Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker. I mean, you spend the New Generation era, the Attitude era, Ruthless Aggression, right. PG. What do you attribute your longevity to? Why do you think you survived there longer than most guys did?
Because, number one, I got along great with everybody. I did exactly what I was told to do. I didn't give them no shit over it. If they wanted me to put somebody over, I went out there and put some people over. And I was really good at, like, time cues and stuff like that for TV. I was really good with time cues. I was just, like I said, and I just gave them no problems. I was always on time. Actually, I was always early getting to TVs and house shows most of the time. But I did exactly what I was supposed to do, and I didn't cause any issues or problems. And I got along great with everybody. And plus, I worked hard. Don't get me wrong. I know I worked hard because I went out there and busted my ass every night. And I worked hard, and that's what kept me there. And I've seen a lot of things go on. I don't know everything. I don't know the insides of, like, the top guys of the goings-on there. But, you know, I know what I know. And I feel like, because I promise you, Vince wouldn't have kept me if I was doing something wrong. I promise you that. And I just think it was just my hard work and my dedication and my loyalty, to be perfectly honest, you know. I heard Coach Jonathan Coachman do an interview not too long ago and talking about how Vince is loyal. Vince is loyal, but he's only loyal to the guys that make him a ton of money. That's who he's loyal to. I honestly think it was just my loyalty and my hard work that kept me there.
Now, you've gone through many names over the years. You started out as Thurman Sparky Plug, which I know you hated.
I couldn't stand that.
Although, that came from your background in auto racing, so I guess it was art imitating life.
Right, yeah, and that's back when everything was a cartoon character, and it was just, and plus WWF back then is where everybody wanted to be, and that's where I wanted to be. And when my contract came in the mail, you know, I had a meeting with them. They flew me up there. I had a meeting and talked to Vince and JJ Dillon for about an hour, and they sent me home, and here comes my contract in the mail about 3 or 4 days later. And it said Thurman Sparky Plug. I about fell out, and I was like, you know what? I don't care if they call me shithead. That's where I want to be. And I guarantee everybody who lasted that name, if they gave them that name, they're not going to tell WWE, no, you're not. I'm not going to go as that character.
Of course not.
They'll take what they get, right? And because I just thought, you know what? I'll take what they give me. I'll make the best of it and go from there. And I did. I couldn't put 100% into it. Because I wasn't comfortable. I tried, but I just wasn't comfortable with that character. And so then that's when I think it was like 6 or 8 months, something like that, I'd been there. And I just couldn't take it anymore. So I went to Vince and said, hey, Vince, I said, can we change my name? And I thought he was going to get mad at me. And this was before I even knew Vince, how Vince was and his personality and everything. I basically didn't know the man. And so I walked into his makeshift office at a TV taping we were doing, and I was nervous as hell. And I thought, okay, well, I'm going to walk in, and I'll probably walk out fired. And I walked in, and I said, Vince, I really appreciate you giving me a job here. I'm very grateful to you for that. I said, but my name has got to go. And he just sat there for a second, hesitated, didn't say a word for like 10 seconds. Vince is the kind of person, like, when you sit there with him and you're talking to him about just about anything, pretty much, or anything that pertains to work and whatever issues you bring up to him, he will stop. He'll let you keep talking all you want. And the big mistake that a lot of people make is because Vince isn't saying anything, so they'll just keep talking. And I kind of fell into that, and then I thought, I need to stop. So I stopped myself. And all he said was, after about a 10-second pause, he goes, well, what do you want to change it to? And I was just like, how about we'll go with drop the Sparky Plug and go with Bob Holly? And he's like, Bob Holly it is. And he said, anything else? I'm like, no, sir, that's it. And I turned around and walked out, and I was like, wow, what just happened? I mean, it was that easy, you know. So it was just – so that's how the whole thing transitioned from Thurman Sparky Plug to Bob Spark Plug Holly, and then it went to the Midnight Express gimmick, which that didn't work out too well. And I knew that wasn't going to work because you can't recreate one of the greatest tag teams in the history of professional wrestling. And that's what they were trying to do, and it just wasn't going to work. And I knew that, and so I couldn't put 100% into that either, even though I tried. And then so that whole thing kind of went away, and then the Job Squad thing came up with Al Snow. And Al brought me into that little deal, which I was grateful for. And so that's when we dropped everything and just went with Bob Holly. And then the whole hardcore thing came along. And actually, Vince is the one that gave me the Hardcore Holly name. And if it wasn't for that whole deal, after the Job Squad thing played out, I would have been done after a few years with the company. The whole hardcore division, once they started that, that pretty much saved my career there. It actually did. And I've always been very grateful and for that. And I'm very grateful for Vince for that, because Vince is the one that actually gave me the name. And it just, and that's one of the reasons why I probably stayed there so long, because I just finally found my niche and I felt comfortable being, you know, Hardcore Holly, because I've always been, ever since I was a little kid, I've always been into like rough sports and just being very aggressive in everything I did. And so it just kind of fit, and I was just very comfortable doing it.
The whole hardcore super heavyweight stuff, the team with Crash, I mean, that personally, that was my favorite, you know, part of your career. I'm sure, just listening to you, I'm sure it was yours too. I mean, how much fun was that run for you? And it just seemed like up until that point, they really weren't doing anything serious with you.
No, they weren't. And I can't remember what, I think it was Milwaukee I showed up, if I'm not mistaken, and they said, Bruce Pritchard told me, he said, you have a cousin now. I'm like, do what? Excuse me? He goes, you have a cousin now. Crash is your cousin. And I had no idea what was going on. And usually they'll call you during that week and let you know if they have plans for TV for you, like a, you know, a major change in your storylines or characters or anything. And they never told me anything, and I just showed up, and here's this guy, Michael Lockwood, they introduced me to and said, that's your cousin. And which was great, because it's funny, because him and I had chemistry right off the bat from the very first time we were in the ring. We had chemistry, and I knew, and I felt it too, that this is going to work, because it was actually fun, and they gave us so much good stuff to play with, actually. And the promos got to be fun. Everything just got to be fun with him. And he's a funny little bastard. You know, he was his own worst enemy, though. He really was. But he complained a lot, and that just drove me nuts. And I always tried to tell Mike, shut up, just keep your mouth shut. And he got very vocal, and that kind of ended up pushing him out the door. But through the times that him and I were together doing that whole super heavyweight stuff, that was a blast. That was a blast with him. And people really enjoyed it. I get a lot of feedback from people all the time saying, oh, I loved it when you guys were the super heavyweights. And it was one of those things where I was really enjoying what I was doing. I always looked forward to going to TV and cutting a promo, and then they pull the plug on it for whatever reason. Just one of those things where you don't know why they do what they do, but they do it. And they pulled the plug on it, and then they kind of made us have us go our separate ways a little bit here and there. But prior to that, they added Molly to the mix, and there was one Christmas they were going to do a Holly family Christmas. They had it all laid out. I mean, it was going to be good too, and fun. And we actually, the whole family, we lived in a trailer. It was going to be an old rundown trailer, and we were having Christmas, and I was going to be wearing a sweater and a Christmas sweater and all this stuff. It was really good how they had it all. And we were all like, there was going to be like 15 or 20 family members all in this little trailer. And we were all going to start fighting over Christmas and just tearing the whole trailer apart. And that never transpired. I wish we'd have got to do it, but we never got to do it. And I don't know why they didn't run with that or do it. And it's just, again, it's one of those things. You don't know why they pull the plug on it. They just do. But But yeah, there was so many good times that him and I had, and Molly too, that we all just played off of each other very well. And just, it was one of those things that I look back on and just reflect on and just, wow, that was such a great time.
Were you close with him outside the ring, or was it just a business relationship?
It was mostly a business relationship, but he was always worried. Like, he would go out and do things and get in trouble, and he was always worried that if I found out, he didn't want me to find out for whatever reason. I don't know why, but he was just always going out and having a good time and partying and stuff and getting in trouble and doing things he shouldn't be doing. And like, a lot of the boys would come to me and say, yeah, Crash is always worried that you're going to find out and be really pissed at him and stuff like that. And it's like, I don't care what he does outside the company. As long as he shows up and does his job here, it didn't matter to me what he did. As long as he wasn't hurting anybody else, obviously. But, you know, I didn't care what he did. As long as he showed up and did what he was supposed to do, and he was on point when he did it. And he did. He was on point all the time.
Now, there's a series of incidents that, you know, earned you a reputation over the years as a bully or being difficult to work with, and I want to give you the chance to address them here. One is the match with Brock Lesnar, where he dropped you on your head, he broke your neck. A lot's been made about what happened there, that you sandbagged him to make him look bad. Talk about what actually happened in that match.
I just want to know where people got that idea. Where did that come from? Was somebody in the ring with us? Was somebody in the locker room standing there? Was some fan sitting in the locker room with us when we were going over our match? It just puzzles me how somebody can just write a story and people will run with it and believe it. Actually, him and I got along really well. We got along really good, and I always enjoyed working with him. And it was just one of those deals where he hadn't been there very long, and they wanted me to work with him because that was, a lot of times that was my job, bring a new guy in that they're fixing to make a big run with and groom him and help him along and stuff. And I knew what my role was. And so we were in the ring and we had a power bomb spot where he was going to shoot me up for a power bomb, and I was going to jump out of it and land on my feet and drop kick him. And so the match, we'd been going to maybe 7-8 minutes or whatever. And it was just, he was all sweaty and I was all sweaty, and he went to pick me up, and I felt him start to go because our timing was kind of off, where I thought he was going to go. So I started to go. And as I was coming back down, you really can't see it because it's all in how your feet, movement of your feet. You give somebody that little help, you know, and Brock, he doesn't need any help because he's so damn strong anyway, but I'm just so used to helping people. So it's one of the things where I'd go to give him that little boost. And by the time I went to give that boost, he wasn't going yet. He wasn't ready. So I was kind of relaxed for a second. Then he went to go. And as he went, I was trying to reach for the back of his head because I wasn't ready. And so I was trying to reach for the back of his head, and he was trying to pull me up, and he just set me back down. And it looked like he drove me, but he didn't. And it was just something that just got messed up. It wasn't a sandbag. It wasn't nothing. If Brock can belly to belly Big Show, you really think I could sandbag Brock? I don't think so.
Right.
And so, right, you know, and so it's funny where people get this. And so anyway, we went in the back after it was over. We went in the back, and I was laying on the table, and I was in a lot of pain, and Brock was back there with me, and he apologized a million times over. I was like, Brock, it's okay. It's all right. Don't worry about it. Just, you know, it's fine. I said, I'll be all right. And Johnny comes in there and starts screaming at Brock. You can't be hurting our guys, blah, 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 blah. You can't be hurting them. We're fixing to push you, and nobody's going to want to work with you if you're hurting guys. And I'm like, Johnny, lay off of him. I'm like, oh, my God, he didn't mean it. It was an accident. And he goes, it just doesn't look good. And I was like, I don't care. It wasn't his fault. Don't worry about it. And so Johnny kind of got off of him and everything, and he walked out of the room. Out of the locker room, and Brock's standing there. He's like, man, I am really sorry. And I'm like, and I just told him, I said, it's okay. I'll be fine. So then, you know, I went home and everything, and I finally figured out something wasn't right. But after my surgery and everything, Brock had called me several times, just checking on me, make sure I was, you know, how things are going, how my surgery was and everything. So, you know, and it's funny because I don't know where people, I guess people just in their own mind want to just create this thing because because somebody doesn't like me, it's like, oh, Bob sandbagged him, you know, that's pretty shitty of him to do that and everything. And it's, and Bob didn't get along with people in the locker room. And it's like, what I try to tell people is you got to use common sense. If I was really as bad as some people say on the internet that I was, do you really think I'd have been with that company for 15 years? That's, you really got to stop and think about, because I tell them, stop and think about that question you're asking me right now, that, you know, you sandbag Brock, you guys didn't get along, or you were a bully in the locker room. And it's like, I tell people, think about what you're telling me right now. If you worked for a company and you were all these things you're thinking that I am right now, do you think you'd be working for that company you work for? No, you wouldn't. You would have been fired. And that's what I tell people. Vince would have fired me a long time before 15 years, a long time ago, if that was the case. Because why would they keep me around for 15 years if I didn't get along with anybody in the locker room, if I pushed people around and all this? I'd have had my ass kicked 20 times over if I acted like they say I did on the internet. There's no way, you know, and it's just, it's the furthest thing from the truth, furthest thing from the truth. And it's, I could go on the internet and write something about it. I can go on the internet and say something about you, Jason, and people are going to believe it, whether it's true or not. And that's the bad part about the internet. People don't check their facts. Somebody wrote something about me the other day and said that he wrote this thing, which was very nice of him to write this piece on me, and I really appreciated it. But he said I was Bob Superstar Howard when I first started wrestling. And I asked him, I'm like, where did you get that? And he goes, I read it on the internet. I'm like, don't you think you need to check your facts before you write something to make sure that was my name when I first started wrestling? Because that wasn't my name when I first started wrestling. It was Bob Holly. And he apologized. And then that's just an example of how people get caught up in the internet reading stories and so forth. And it's like, and sometimes it's frustrating, but on the other hand, it's kind of comical. But it's the whole thing with me and Brock, that was just an accident that happened. It was nothing intentional that he did, and there is no way on God's green earth that I can sandbag that man. There is no way.
Another incident, I mean, you touched briefly on it before, but I know it's kind of taken on a life of its own. You've gotten a lot of flack for it over the years, is when you beat the hell out of Matt Capitelli on Tough Enough. What's your side of the story on that?
Well, you know what the thing is like, again, you know, we talked about it earlier that when I flew to do that show for MTV, the office had me fly there. I had a cracked vertebrae in my neck. And another thing, like Matt, he was moving around so much in the corner, flopping around, but I was no different with him than I am with anybody else. I didn't break his arm. I didn't break his leg. I didn't knock his teeth out. He got a black eye and he got a busted lip. I can't tell you how many times I've had a black eye and a busted lip, but I've never gone on TV and cried that I wanted to quit wrestling because somebody was rough with me. And I'm going in there doing what I'm told to do. I'm not told to go out there and beat the shit out of anybody, by no means, but I'm told to go out there and test people a lot of times because they want to see if they're going to come back, see how they handle certain situations, because certain situations are going to come up in the ring on a nightly basis when you're wrestling on the road. Things are going to happen, and they want to see how people handle stuff. Like Randy Orton, they told me to take it to Randy Orton, see what the kid's made of, see what how he handles adversity in the ring, see how he handles somebody being rough with him. We want to see how he's going to handle all this. And Randy did just fine. You never heard a peep out of him. I was rough with him. I was really rough with Randy. And not one word was said, not one word. But I give a guy a black eye on TV, and next thing you know, I'm the worst criminal on the planet. And it's like, I can't tell you how many times I've had a black eye, but you'll never see a tear come out of my eye. You know, like when I worked with Chris Jericho, first time I worked with him, I worked with him like three nights in a row. He busted my lip open three nights in a row. And that's just the nature of the business. It's just, stuff's going to happen. And I didn't intentionally go out there to hurt Matt. I think I hurt his feelings more than anything, but I didn't physically hurt him, you know. And it's just, and the bad part about that whole situation, because that's when the whole internet thing was just getting going really good. The internet hasn't really caught on fire yet, but it was starting to rumble a little bit. The internet was really starting to be, you know, really big. And I was sitting at home, and Brian Gerwitz called me, and he wanted to check on me and see how I was doing. And he said, you know, he said, you are the buzz on the internet right now because of the whole thing with Matt Capitelli. He said, it's a shame you're out right now because you would be our hottest heel right now. And it's like, opportunity comes and goes. And that was one opportunity that I completely missed out on because I was hurt. Unfortunately, I was out because of injury, but I wasn't able to capitalize on that at that moment, which would have been great for my career. And because WWE was really, they were wanting to sink their teeth into that and take advantage of that whole situation. And they really didn't. I mean, when I came back to work after 13 months, they did a little program with me and Matt, but it was one of those things where they hotshotted it and it was done. But, it just sucks because it's not that I intentionally went out there to be the biggest heel on the planet or be the biggest jackass on the planet. But, it's something that just happened. And it was one of those things where they couldn't capitalize on that situation because I think they really would have sunk their teeth into that whole situation right there at that moment, because it was really hot at that moment, and they couldn't do it.
John Morrison came out of that same season of Tough Enough, and he didn't he say something to you years later about that incident?
He did, and it's funny because I saw John in Des Moines, Iowa, a couple months ago, and it's funny because that whole scenario, that situation, that whole story came back up, and he completely changed his whole thought process about that whole situation that happened. And he understood my position and my situation that I was in. He completely understood it. And because he was actually, when they interviewed him right after it had happened, he didn't like it one bit and thought it was just ridiculous and unnecessary. And it just went too far. But if you ask him today, he's got a whole different outlook on that situation now. And it's just funny because now he's been in the wrestling business, so he sees how it is, and he understands it, and he gets it now. And it's funny, if you ever get a chance to talk to him, ask him and get his thought process on that, because it's completely different from his very first interview, completely different. He understands where I was coming from. So it's kind of funny, you know, we laugh about it now, and like I've always got along with Matt, even after that whole situation. We talked about it and everything, and you know, when I came back to work and stuff, we talked about it, and it was one of those situations where we just kind of laughed it off, and just it is what it was, you know. And and from what I understand, Matt's doing pretty well now. I know he's had issues and stuff in the past and everything, and I hate that, you know, he's had some terrible luck here lately, you know, not lately, but in the past. But I mean, he's got everything going good now, from what I understand, because I talked to John. I think John Morrison talked to him not too long ago and said he's doing really well. He's in Louisville now and he's doing good. But yeah, him and I, you know, me and Matt, we, like I said, after that whole situation blew over, we were fine with each other.
Daniel Puter, I got tweets from some people who wanted me to ask you about him. You worked with him on house shows, and then of course everybody remembers the Royal Rumble match in 2005, I think it was you, Benoit, and Eddie, you were just chopping the crap out of him. All three of you seemed to be having a lot of fun. What did he do that rubbed you guys the wrong way?
He just carried himself completely different than anybody else that just came in. I think that whole thing with him and Kurt went to his head because Kurt thought that whole thing was a work as far as that armbar that he got Kurt in, because Kurt thought he was supposed to let Daniel get him an armbar and then Daniel wasn't supposed to crank on it, and he did. And I think Daniel was taking it as they were both shooting on each other and he got the best of Kurt, which is completely the furthest thing from the truth, because Kurt actually let him do that to him, because Kurt thought that's what was supposed to happen, how they wanted it. And but he just carried himself after that whole situation there. He just thought that he could come in the locker room. He just absolutely had no respect for anybody, actually, the way he carried himself, and thought he won that contract and was making big money and thought he was untouchable. And back then, the locker room, those guys, the locker room was tough. It was really tough. I mean, you had some guys that you just don't push their buttons. And if you rub guys the wrong way, it's not the office that runs you off. It's the boys that run you off. That's how it worked back in the day. I don't know how it is today, but back then, it was the boys that ran you off. If you didn't fit in that locker room, you were gone. You would not last.
Yeah, there were stories about that when the WCW guys came over. I think there was a referee who ran for the hills.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I can't remember who that was.
No, Billy Silverman.
But yeah, yes, Billy Silverman. Yeah, and I think he sued the company because it was an incident between him and Bradshaw, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Something happened on the plane, which I wasn't there at that time. But from what I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it had something to do with Bradshaw.
Yeah,
I'm not
mistaken. I believe so.
And Billy just, he couldn't handle it, and he left. You know, it was just because if you show any ounce of weakness in that locker room, those guys will pounce in a New York minute. They will. They sure will. And you just, you know, and the thing is, the way I was taught to come into a locker room, you come in, you speak to everybody, shake everybody's hand, you sit down, you find a spot that isn't occupied, and you sit down, and you close your mouth and open your ears. And that's what I was taught. But I don't know how it is today. And back when Pewter came in, he didn't do that. He just came in and just ran his mouth and just popped off at guys and just said what he felt like he wanted to say. And just in there, you know, in the locker room back then, it was just, there was a pecking order in a sense, and you don't come in there and act like you own the locker room. I mean, he would come in, he wouldn't shake anybody's hand, and like he would shake a few guy people's hand, but that's it. It's like he wouldn't go around and say hey to everybody, and that's locker room etiquette. You always do that. And that's what I was always taught, because when Paul Bearer first brought me in, because he was actually the one who helped me get into WWE, and he told me, he goes, when you get in that locker room, you make sure you speak to everybody, and you just don't speak unless you're spoken to. I was like, yes, sir, no problem there. And that's exactly what I did, you know, and that's what everybody did that came in, except for Daniel. He just didn't. He just didn't fit. He just didn't fit, basically. And so we just, you know, we had fun with him. And the way it worked out with the whole thing with chopping, it just, you had three guys in there that liked to chop. And poor Daniel Pewter, he was just the sacrificial lamb, just happened to be in there because it was me, Eddie, and Chris. And it was one of those deals where the opportunity presented itself. And guess what? Somebody's fixing to get the shit chopped out of them. And that's exactly what happened, you know?
One thing I was going to just ask you this. I mean, one thing I didn't know about until I read your book was that you had scheduled surgery for an injury, and Vince came to you. He asked you to put it off because he had big plans for you. This was heading into WrestleMania 23, and that big plan was you against Bobby Lashley in the Battle of the Billionaires. Right. It was Vince against Donald Trump, which, of course, ended up getting changed. Now, you document a lot of other instances of broken promises throughout your run there. I mean, was it politics? I mean, what's your best guess as to why you got passed over so often for opportunities like that?
Honestly, I don't know. That's one of those things. If I sat and thought about it, which I did, and yes, it drove me crazy. Because I always tell you, don't try to figure things out because it'll drive you crazy. Well, that drove me crazy. That was one of those things where I was with Bobby Lashley working house shows with him. And they told us, we're going into Mania. You guys are going to take this into Mania. And I was like, oh, okay, great. I'm going to get a spot in Mania. You know, Manias for me were few and far between. So I was just happy to even get something. And that was a big deal, that whole thing with Donald Trump and Vince, the whole hair versus hair deal. And I thought, wow, that's going to be great. I get to be part of that. I was psyched about that. And so I went into it. Was, I think Mania was a couple weeks out, and got to TV, and I knew I had a cage match with Bobby Lashley. And that's all I knew. And so they told me the finish and everything, what they wanted, and said Umaga's going to hit the ring and knock down the cage. And right there, I saw the writing on the wall right there. I was like, okay, I know where this is going. And we're going to have Bobby go over on you, and then Umaga's going to come in and do his thing with Bobby. You just kind of roll out of the way, and it's like, okay. And that right there told me everything I needed to know. Once they told me that Bobby's going over on you, Umaga's hitting the ring. You know, and it's great for Umaga. He got a great spot in Mania, but it just, I got shoved out, and I don't know why. I don't know why, because I was supposed to have elbow surgery because I had a bone spur and bone chips, and my ulnar nerve, there's a nerve that you have that runs up underneath your elbow. It's called the ulnar nerve. Well, that was being pinched, so my hand was going numb all the time, and I wanted to get surgery done on it. And I'll never forget, Kevin Dunn and Vince they just finished a production meeting, and I went in there and I saw them because they wanted to talk to me, and they knew what the issue was because they saw the medical reports that I needed to have surgery. And so Vince wanted to talk to me. So I went in there, and Kevin was in there with him, and said, hey, would you mind putting it off till we get through Mania? And I was like, yeah, as long as I know I'm going to be on Mania. He goes, I promise you, you are going to be in WrestleMania. I promise you. And I was like, okay, great. I said, I have no problem putting it off. I've dealt with it, you know, for a couple months now. I can put it off for a few more weeks. No problem to be in Mania. And he goes, I promise you, you will be on Mania. I said, okay, thank you. And I said, I really appreciate it, Vince. And he goes, no, thank you. And so I turned and walked away. And then, you know, a couple weeks later, we were, like I said, we were at TV, and I knew I had the cage match with Bobby, and we did the thing, and they said Umaga's going to hit the ring and knock down the one side of the cage onto the announcer's tables and everything. And I was like, okay, well, I must be out on this one. And I knew it. I just knew it. And I was mad, but I was really disappointed. I actually don't know what I was feeling at that time. And it was just like, oh my God, here we go again. And I don't, it's one of them things where you can't go to somebody and say, what the hell, you know, you just don't do that for whatever reason. And I wasn't one to want to create waves with, you know, upper management and stuff like that. So we got to Mania and everything, and it just got to me. And when they had that, I think it was a lumberjack tag match, if I'm not mistaken. It was actually before Mania went live. It was just for the house, basically. And I was one of the lumberjacks, and they wanted everybody involved in it to interact with the guys in the ring and stuff like that. And I just, if there's video of it, you just see me just standing there, not moving, I was just stone faced, just standing there, just looking off into space. Cause I was just so mad, and disappointed. I was feeling every emotion you could probably feel, you know, and I actually wanted to sit there and just cry because, you know, it was bad. I wanted to cry. I wanted to scream. I wanted to punch somebody. I didn't know what I wanted to do, basically. Anyway, I made it through that day, and then the next day we get to, it was, we were in Indiana doing TV taping. It was anyway, it was in Indiana. We were doing Monday Night Raw. And I just, the more I got to thinking about it, the madder I got. And Dusty knew I was pissed. And he pulled me out because I was fixing to walk out. I was just fixing to leave, say, I'm done, and just leave and go get on a plane and go home. And Dusty grabbed me and pulled me off to the side. He's like, hey, kid, just, I know it bothers you. I know it. He said, just don't do anything stupid that you're going to regret. Just chill out. He said, it's going to be fine. I mean, he basically talked me off the ledge, if you know what I'm saying.
Sure.
And I was just, he calmed me down a lot, but I was so disappointed because I gave everything to that company. I'd go out there and give 100% every night. And it was almost like the only way it was paying off, it was just keeping my job there for so long. And I felt like that's as far as it was getting me. And, you know, and I see guys today complaining because they're not getting a push here. Or they don't get to be in this show or get to be in WrestleMania or this. And I'm like, I have no sympathy for you guys whatsoever. None. And because I've been there, done that, I know what it feels like, and it's a horrible feeling. And then when I see guys complain very vocally about not getting to be in WrestleMania, and it's like, I just want to tell them, shut the fuck up, will you please? Just go out there and do your job, you know? And it's like, you know, and it's like, that's the first thing that comes to my mind, you know, because I was so angry about not being in WrestleMania, not getting the opportunities that I felt like I should have got. And on the other hand, I was also grateful because I did get a chance to make a great living doing what I wanted to do. So I'm sitting there telling myself, hey, this job has made you a great living. You've got to do everything you've always wanted to do because of this job. Be happy with that, you know. So I would tell myself that, and it'd be like, okay, you know, I've felt better about that. But you always want, like with like professional wrestling, your goal is to be at the top of the mountain with the other guys that are there. And I never got there, and I never got to hold a major title or anything, and I was disappointed, but then again, I was like, still, I was very fortunate to be where I was for so long and have the opportunities that I did have that were given to me, you know, but that one just stung a little bit more than the rest of them did for whatever reason. And I think it was because I was promised something and I mean, it would be different if it was like, yeah, you're good. Yeah. I'm telling you, we're going to do WrestleMania, but it was one of those things where I'm one of these kind of people. You tell me something, if you tell me you're going to do something, I expect you to do it. And that's, unfortunately, that's not the way society is anymore, because a lot of people don't do what they say they're going to do. But, and I always thought, you know, Vince is going to take care of me, which again, he did take care of me. Don't get me wrong. He did take care of me. I wanted to be in that one WrestleMania match so bad. And I was just so let down, basically.
You were released by WWE in 2009. I've heard conflicting stories about why, so I'll just put it to you. What happened there?
I was at home. I had my elbow surgery, and I was at home. And John Laurinaitis called me and said, hey, have the doctors released you yet? And I said, yes, they have. I'm ready to come back to work. And he goes, okay. He goes, I said, are you going to bring me back? Moving the storyline? What's going to happen? He goes, they don't have anything for you. And I was like, I don't want to come back and sit around. And he's like, they don't have anything for you. And I said, Johnny, I said, you know as well as I do, you don't make any money putting people over and just sitting around. I said, I've been there. I've done that. I don't want to do that anymore. And if they don't have anything for me, you guys might as well just let me go. So he goes, I'll call you back. Called me back about a week later and said, they don't have anything for you. We'll send you a release. I'm like, okay. And it was almost shocking to me because it was like, you're just going to let me go just like that. And there was a story. And I even told him there's a storyline there with me, Cody, and Ted Jr. But they just, for whatever reason, they just didn't want to follow up on that. And I don't understand why. Again, it was one of those situations where you can't figure out why they do the things they do. And I was just, again, it was one of those things where, wow, with this company for so long, they're just so quick to just let me go just like that. And that just, that kind of bothered me too, because it was like, okay, well, I obviously didn't mean anything to that company. And so it was just that easy, just that quick. Johnny called me and said, we're going to let you go. And I was like, okay. And they sent me my release. And I was just, I was shocked. I really was. I was like, wow.
Now, you've had a lot of praise for Dolph Ziggler. I know you're a big Dolph Ziggler fan. He is challenging for the championship at SummerSlam. He's in a pretty high-profile match. What are your thoughts on that and how Dolph's been treated over the years? I mean, after all the start-and-stop pushes with him, I mean, do you think he can be a top guy in the company?
I think he can. And I'm glad you brought this up, because Dolph right now should be world champion. I think he's one of the most talented guys. I think he should have been world champion a long time ago. I think he's probably one of the most talented guys on the roster. He's the purest form of an athlete that you will ever find in someone. And he's very talented. He could talk. He can wrestle. The guy can flat go. He bumps his ass off. He sells his ass off. I mean, he is everything all in one that you need to have the it factor, and he's got it. And I'm glad you brought this up, because that brings me to something to where they've always told us too in talent meetings, you guys are the ones that create your own push. We don't push you. You guys create your own push. And the whole thing was, you know, Vince was talking about this whole thing, the push. What is the push? And he wants guys to go out there, reach for that brass ring. And it's like you're telling everybody that the talent creates their own push. Well, if that's the case, then how come Dolph hasn't been world champion? How come they keep beating him over and over and over? Another good example is, they released him not too long ago, Mizdow.
Damian Sandow.
Damian Sandow, yeah. They let him go, and he was hot. I mean, he got over. He did what they wanted him to do, go out there and get over, and he got over. He did everything they asked the guys to do. Go out there, get over, and you'll create your own push. Well, he got over. He was one of the hottest things going, and they let him go.
Yeah, it's puzzling, especially because they have this brand extension now, and they're giving, you know, a lot of undercard guys a chance, and they're bringing up some NXT guys, and you would think he would be tailor-made to do something meaningful on either one of the shows.
Right, and what it is he doesn't fit the mold to what they see as somebody carrying the company or representing the company how they want someone to represent the company. But it shouldn't matter, because he goes out there, gets over, sells tickets. That's the name of the game. He did that. He does that. And then they release him. And then it's like the whole thing with Roman Reigns. You know, this guy wasn't getting over for 2 years. They shoved him down everybody's throat. It's been about 2 years, I think, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere around there. But they keep pushing him, pushing him, pushing him, pushing him. Still, people aren't still buying him. And it's like, okay, you're telling everybody to go out there and get over, but yet he's not getting over, but yet you keep shoving him down everybody's throat. And here you have Damian Sandow, goes out, gets over, and you let him go. And it's like any of the other talent that comes up from NXT. They go out there, they give them a few weeks, couple of months, or however long to get over. They're not getting over. Well, we got to pull the plug on them. Well, how come they didn't pull the plug on Roman Reigns? Because Roman Reigns is the guy that they want to be the guy to carry the company, to represent the company, and how they look at it. And it's like these other guys and that just baffles my mind. Again, that's one of those things where it'll drive yourself crazy thinking about it. You know, and it just insults the fans' intelligence when they say the talent creates their own push. Well, that's the furthest thing from the truth. the office is the one that picks and chooses who we're going to do things with and where we're going to go with them. You know, yeah, some guys may end up standing out, and then all of a sudden, well, we're going to take this guy and run with him. Yeah, that happens here and there every once in a while. But when you tell a talent like Damian Sandow to go over there and get out, go out there and get over, and he does exactly what you guys tell him to do, and then he surprises you because he's one of the most over guys in the company, and then you release him, that sends a message like, okay, you just confused everybody.
Well, it's almost like they resent him for it.
Right. And it's just not that situation. There's been other instances where, but that's just how the wrestling business is. It's been going on like that for years and years, and it's nothing new, but it's, I don't like it when, you know, even JR, I love JR to death, but he says the talent has to get over. And they do have to get over, but when they do get over and then they don't do anything with them, now what's your excuse? And they won't tell you anything. And because they have in their mind what they want to do with each person, and they know exactly where they're going to go with each person. Come hell or high water, we're going to get, if this is our guy, like Roman Reigns, come hell or high water, we're going to push this guy until he gets over. And that's what they kept trying to do. You know, they've got so much money invested in them now, they've got to keep doing something with them to get their money back out of them. So I just, it's just, they've always done that, always done that. But I just don't like it when they tell the talent that you have to go out there and get over. Show us you can get over and go out there and grab that brass ring. And you go out there and you grab that sumbitch and you tear that sumbitch apart. And then you're still sitting there wondering, okay, all right, where's my turn? And then they send you a release. It's like, okay, that's just really confusing.
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, at the end of the day, you'll only get over as much as they want you to.
Exactly. And that's exactly what it is. Because they have their idea of how they want things to go. They don't want the fans to dictate who they want to be on the top of the mountain.
I want to do a little. I want to do a little word association here before we wrap up. You were there for so long. You got to know and. Go ahead.
Can I say something real quick?
Sure, absolutely.
I know you had DDP on your show last week, and I want to say something. I have so much respect for this guy, for what he has done for others is just so amazing, and this man has so much patience with so many people. And this guy doesn't get enough credit, the credit he deserves. And I don't know Dallas that well. I've been around him. I've worked with him a few times, but I don't know him well enough to say he's a good friend or anything. I've worked with him a few times or whatever and been around him here and there. But I just want to say this guy is amazing what he has done for people and got people in shape with his DDP yoga and everything. I have so much respect for this guy. It's just unbelievable what he has done for Jake Roberts, for Scott Hall and guys like that. It's just, he just shows so much patience and my hat's off to that guy. I had to throw that out there. And for you guys out there that are struggling with, you know, injuries or things like that, check out DDP yoga because it's obvious that stuff works and it helps everybody. So, yeah, I want to throw that out there because he deserves he doesn't get the admiration that he deserves. He really doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, I would say aside from The Rock, he would have to be if not the one of the great success stories as far as a wrestler transitioning from wrestling into something else. And it's funny, you know, when I spoke to him, he talked about you. He talked about the match. I know both of you got pretty beat up in that match, and it was kind of funny. He was talking about the part where you guys came off the top rope, and I guess he inadvertently kicked you in the kicked you in the nether regions.
Yeah, he got me good right between the legs, and I remember that very well because
we were
actually in Tucson, Arizona. I remember it well, Yeah, he did. He got me right between the legs. And I guess he hurt his neck that night, too. And I had no idea that he got hurt. I had no idea. I really didn't. And I feel awful about that he got hurt. And he never said anything to me about it. I mean, I knew a while back, you know, because I had heard that he had got hurt from that match or hurt his neck or something like that, but I didn't know it was as bad as it was, you know, as it was. And, you know, I feel horrible for that because it was just nothing, you know, it was just a simple, supposed to be a simple suplex off the top rope.
Sure.
And I think that's when he hurt his neck, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Yes, that was pretty much the injury that ended his career in WWE. But hey, in a roundabout way, you could kind of take credit for this explosion in DDP Yoga.
Yeah, hey, that's true. Because if that wouldn't have happened, then there's no telling which direction he would have went. And I sent him down the right path. I'll take that credit. But yeah, he does a great job with that. And I haven't tried the yoga yet. I'm fixing to start doing it because I've signed up for it and everything. I just haven't taken the time to stop and do it. I mean, I work out. I still work out every single day. I go to the gym 5-6 days a week still. I actually get up every morning between 3 and 4 every morning so I can get my meals in throughout the whole day. I know that sounds crazy, but that's what I do because, like, my metabolism is so fast, Jason, that just – I could stop eating. Like when I went to Europe, I was in Europe for like 3 weeks and I couldn't eat like I wanted to eat every 3 hours or whatever. And I can lose weight so fast. And like now for me, because I'm not taking anything, I'm not taking any PEDs or steroids or anything like I did in the past. And for me, it's, I have to eat to maintain the size that I am now. And it's so exhausting all the time, constantly, because my day surrounds my eating. My days are planned. My whole day is planned around my eating, and it's part of what I do, and I enjoy it. Don't get me wrong, but I have to eat like a damn horse every two and a half, three hours just to maintain the size that I am, and I actually, you know, I'm 53 and I actually feel still pretty good. I move really well. I feel like I haven't lost a step, but once I do feel like I've lost that step, that's when I'll be stepping out of the ring, you know, but I still feel really good. And like I said, I'm going to start doing that DDP yoga because that's, from what I understand, that's pretty good. It's really good as far as helping people with injuries and so forth, getting them really, really flexible and everything. So,
oh yeah.
Okay. Word Association.
Word Association. So, you know, these guys pretty well, you worked with some of them. Just give me either the first word or the first thought that pops into your head when I give you the name.
Oh gosh. Okay.
Here we go. Bret Hart.
You have to do this to me. One of the best, not the best, but one of the best.
Shawn Michaels.
The best.
Undertaker.
Respect. Massive respect.
Vince Russo, because I know he was a pretty big part of that whole Attitude Era when you were there.
Great mind for the business.
Triple H.
Great storyteller. Great worker. But that's it.
John Cena.
Workhorse.
Last but not least, Vince McMahon.
The Don. Basically the leader of the mafia. The thing is with Vince, despite everything that's gone on, I still have a lot of respect for that man. My loyalty lays with that man. Even though I've been disappointed 100 times, he's always taken care of me throughout all my career, my injuries, everything. I have nothing bad to say about him. I really don't. And just, he's always been good to me, despite, you know, that's my feeling towards him. That's my relationship. That's how I've dealt with him and things like that. Other people may not like him for whatever reason, but me personally, he's always been good to me that I know of. And I appreciate that because the thing is he didn't have to keep me there 15 years. He really didn't. And he didn't have to pay me the money that he paid me. And that's why I've always been grateful and thankful to him, because without being in WWE, I don't think I've ever been able to do the things that I've always wanted to do in my life. And because I worked for him, I was able to afford to do everything I've always wanted to do. And I'll never, ever forget that. And I'm very thankful for that and very grateful for that.
So I know you consider yourself happily semi-retired. Any interest, though, in being an agent or a trainer at some point?
Nope. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Because I'm happy doing what I'm doing. I get to spend all the time I want with my wife and my dog. And I feel like I can be myself. I get to be in control of me. I don't have to have my cell phone on me 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I actually just feel very liberated and very free. And it's not for me anymore. I had my 15-year run. I had a great time, had bad times, had good times. It's just not for me anymore. I'm not saying it's a bad place to be, but it's just not for me anymore. And I don't want to feel like I'm in that pressure cooker again, because I'm spoiled now. I can make decisions for myself. I can come and go as I please. When I get up in the morning, it's like, okay, what are we going to do today? I don't have to do anything if I don't want to. And I enjoy that freedom.
Well, we covered a lot of ground here. I can't thank you enough for giving me as much time as you did. I know you're on Twitter and you have a store on Pro Wrestling Tees as well. So let people know how they can find you.
Yep. I don't have Facebook. I don't have Instagram. I have Twitter at the Bob Holly. Go to ProWrestlingTees.com/Bob Holly. They just put out a new shirt and it's kind of fitting for Hardcore Holly. I don't even like the people that I like. And they just came out that it's I love it. People, you know, it's funny because people, they pop whenever I tell them about it, or they see it, or like I'm getting a good response from people on Twitter about it. They like it. And so I'm hoping people will get it and, you know, and see. And also September 10th, I'm going to be in New Orleans for Wildcat Sports. I'm going to do a show for them working against Stevie Richards. But other than that, I thank you for having me on the show. I'm sure I'll hang up with you, and I'll be thinking of so much more I could have said or I should have said. Well, that always happens. And I appreciate you having me on your show, and I feel like it is a privilege to be on your show. So thank you, Jason, very much.
I appreciate that. And again, this was a long time in the making, and you're welcome back anytime.
Well, whenever you want to have me back on, you just send me a message, because I will be glad to do it.
Absolutely. And thanks, everybody, for listening. You can hear full episodes of the regular Sound Up podcast every Sunday. I am the Solomonster. He is Bob Holly. And we will see you right back here again real soon. Take care, guys.